So yesterday, in the Shemot Bagatim class, we were reading from Cantor 1, Chapter 19, Text 7. And in the evening when I was looking at the verse, I realized that there was a little extra section to the purport, which is one verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes at the very end of the purport of Text 7. So I would like to go back over that particular verse and save this verse for tomorrow so someone can change the date and Prabhuji will speak on this verse tomorrow. So back to text 7 and the purport. And this is a very deep and profound verse actually. There are some verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam which you can read them over and over again and you can find new inspiration from reading them. Often the significance of verses like that is that they pertain to us. There can be so many verses in the Bhagavatam that pertain to the consciousness of very exalted souls, and we might feel that it's not quite me, but this one is relevant for us. The purport especially brings this out. So, the Sanskrit, iti vyavachidyar sa pandavaya prapayo pavesham prativishnupadyam dado mukundangrim ananya bhavo munivrato mukta samasta sangha. Translation, thus the king, the worthy descendant of the Pandavas, decided once and for all and sat on the Ganges bank to fast until death and give himself up to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who alone can award liberation. So freeing himself from all kinds of association and attachments, he accepted the vows of the sage. Now, when I read that verse just like that, I think that doesn't exactly apply to me or any of us, that once and for all we can give up all our material desires and that we can immediately release all kinds of association and attachment and accept the vows of the sage. And yet, by becoming devotees, we have begun on this particular path of accepting the vows of the sage. We've accepted that we want in this life to somehow or another become Krishna conscious. To somehow or other in this life become more Krishna conscious than we are right now. Because if we're already Krishna conscious, we don't need to make any advancement. But whether we are just a beginner who has just walked in the door of the temple, or whether we have been practicing the practices of Krishna consciousness for the last 50 years or whatever, or whether we are born into the culture that provides all these elements naturally, or whether we are born into a family of devotees, in every case we should be thinking the same way. I want to increase and advance in my Krishna consciousness. So this is what's common to all of us. Not necessarily the level, someone's high, someone's low, someone's in between. But this determination is essential. And when I think to myself, oh, maybe today I don't feel very determined. Maybe I felt determined yesterday, so that might be enough. I think to myself how we tend to eat every day, except for your job, Ekadasi. And we don't say when breakfast time comes, oh well, I had breakfast yesterday, so maybe I don't need to eat today. Because we take eating as an essential. And we also don't say, oh well, I breathed yesterday, so I don't need to take any air into my lungs today. I can just stay in an airtight room. Because we know, instinctively we know, that breathing is essential. Without breathing, without drinking, without eating, our life will be very short, incredibly short. So similarly, without advancing in devotional service, Our spiritual life can be very short as well. And we should note this. Now, it doesn't mean that Krishna will abandon us, that he says, okay, you're not interested in me today, then I'm not interested in you. It doesn't mean that at all. But it means that within the material world where we're now residing, it is overwhelmingly forceful, the influence of the material energy. It's like if you go also into the ocean and you think to yourself, I'll just float, but the waves are coming. And as you're floating along, one wave is tossing you this way and tossing you that way. And unless you become a good swimmer, there's every possibility that you will drown. So this is not very pleasant to hear, is it? We would like to hear that it's okay, everything's okay, we're okay, the world's okay, we'll be okay, Krishna consciousness is wonderful, blissful, nothing to worry about, just keep going. And that's also true, but it's only true if we hear the other side. If we develop the seriousness to come to the point of maturity. When I and my husband had been devotees for only, myself, only 4 years, and we were living in Hong Kong, and we were isolated from other devotees, but it was at the request of Srila Prabhupada for the purpose of service. So we developed a mentality that was, I should say I developed, because we were quite different. I developed a mentality that was quite duplicitous. I decided that Srila Prabhupada, he told us, he gave an instruction and he said, you stay here in Hong Kong at all costs. That's pretty straightforward. But being a young devotee with many material desires, I kind of moved it a little bit and I thought, okay, he says I should stay here at all costs and it's so difficult to stay here that he won't mind if I just add a little this and this and this, a little salt to the crackers. If I start doing a few material things, it will go unnoticed, and he won't mind because the main thing, I'll be able to do it better. And I was too young and too immature a devotee, perhaps, even if somebody came and explained to me that I was deviating, I would have been able to accept it because of the force of previous materialistic activities being so strong that I was feeling like, no, I know that Srila Prabhupada will be happy and he won't mind, he'll understand. And gradually we came to that, he'll understand and everyone else is doing these things, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But gradually, the taste for material activities, which had been, as it's explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it had been chopped off at the root by association with devotees. It had been chopped off, but the roots remained. And now, I was servicing the growth of those roots by watering them. Please, everyone should turn off their mobile phone, even those who are seriously engaged in service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We have a seat. Another chair. You see, we have to remain Krishna conscious right up to this point of life. And with all due respect to Mataji, I have to say that it's not comfortable and easy to be Krishna conscious as your body ages. And when we're young, we think, oh, that's just something very far away. And also, I don't want to get frightened, because we shouldn't get frightened. We're not trying to frighten anybody. But what we are trying to do is help them to become serious. So when we were living in Hong Kong as young devotees and young people, we started to water the roots of the weeds or the seeds of the desires, material desires that had been chopped off. And what was keeping them, just like if any of you have had experience, or if you have experience in the future of gardening, you'll see that weeds are unwanted plants. Sometimes they're mistaken and they're actually good plants, but they're considered unwanted, and they grow prolifically, very quickly. They grow up and they throw seeds everywhere. One dandelion, you see all the little seeds, and they all have this little parachute attached to them so they can fly in the air all over your garden. Before you know it, you have hundreds of dandelions. So we were keeping the material desires a little bit down, keeping up the Krishna consciousness. But in a garden, if you want to rid yourself of weeds, then one good way to do it is to cover the earth with a weed mat, they call it. And then, oh, this mat, it goes over the earth, and the seeds underneath it, they can't sprout. They're still there, but they can't sprout. So it looks good, your garden looks neat and tidy. But if you were to take the weed mat out, whoop, there they would be again. So we didn't know this. I mean, we were so, I didn't know this. I have to keep referring to the singular, it's embarrassing. But I didn't know this really deeply enough. And so as I was adding just a little bit of a spice of life to my Krishna consciousness, it was having a really dramatic effect. But it happened slowly because I was adding slowly, and all of a sudden I discovered that my taste for Krishna conscious activities was going down. And Bhagavatam class was now a little bit of an endeavor to come to, and it wasn't so pleasing. And my mind was kind of wandering while I was there and wondering also what I was doing there. Our Bhagavatam class was just the two of us. So then the next step was, it became easy to say, we're a bit busy this morning, we'll do it later, we'll do this, we'll do this. And then suddenly there was no hearing of the Bhagavatam. And living as family, as householders, you live at home mostly, coming to the temple less because you have two bases. Whereas when you live in the temple, you have one. And so then the home base becomes stronger. And if the home base doesn't carry all the elements strongly that you've imbibed from the practices in the temple, then very suddenly the home base becomes invaded by materialistic forces of all kinds. And sometimes those materialistic forces used to be spiritual. Just like, for example, we saw that many people used to sell paintings, and they used to give the money to the temple. Or many people worked on computers and did service for the temple. But when the service element was removed, the item itself was neutral. It could be spiritualized by your spiritual intent, and it could be materialized by a material intent, like a knife. I can take a knife and I see somebody needs to eat, and I can give them a knife and they can use it. Or I can take the knife and stab them with it and take all their money. And the knife is not the faulty element. The faulty element is the consciousness. So gradually, as I grew up in Krishna consciousness, I began to realize that the consciousness was my responsibility. And if I didn't take good guidance, and I didn't take careful practice, then my consciousness could go from heaven to hell. It was very flexible. It could move around this way and that way and so on and so forth. And as it moved around, I discovered that as my consciousness went up on this side, material things went up, spiritual things automatically went down. And these are simple things that I felt like I should have always known. But somehow or other, as life went on, I had to learn them and learn them and learn them again. So here we see the king. He is a transcendentalist fully, through and through. But he's an example for us. So he's not wavering, which is amazing to us, because we waver when we have to go out and deal with the world, have to go to work, have to do this, have to attend to even your family. You start thinking, my family, attend to the health issues, my health. And you have to go out to the work, and this is my job. And the result, the fruit of the endeavor is mine. And this is natural for a conditioned soul. But it's not natural in relationship to Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So gradually we should understand where we stand. We should understand that we're very fragile. Even if we're strong, we're fragile in relationship to the material energy. And that we need to seek shelter. And that shelter has to be strong. And to keep going, we have to flap our wings. Keep flying. Otherwise, what happens? We fall down. One time I remember here in Melbourne, it was a very dramatic moment for me. We were, at that particular time, there was a very strong leader who was perhaps not flapping their wings as well as they could have at that particular point. And I was visiting from Vrindavan, which was where we were living at the time. And I was staying with my mother, who lived in Brighton, which is a 20-minute drive. And we were driving to the temple. And I remember there was a kind of a panic in my own consciousness that the leadership isn't there. The leadership isn't working at that particular moment in time. And I thought, what's going to happen to me? And I remember looking out the window of the car as we were driving along the beach, and a flock of seagulls were flying in the sky. And I saw the flock of seagulls flying, and it went through my mind, if every other seagull falls down into the ocean, what are you going to do? And I was like, what am I going to do? And then from them came the answer, I have to keep flying. I have to keep flying. And the next reaction was, it will be too hard. It will be too hard. But I have to keep flying. So at this point, we will be tested on. Because there's a point at which we have to leave the world. And we have to be able to say, all of our fears and worries and doubts and uncertainties, I want to keep flying. Why? Because there's nothing for me here. I've tried it, or I've heard about it, or I've seen other people try it, or I've watched it on videos and that's convinced me as well, and I've seen the movies and that convinces me more that it's a miserable place. And I see my own bad habits, and I see other people's bad habits, and I see how insecure people are when they have loads of money. I've seen rich people, I've seen poor people, I've seen happy people, I've seen everything there. Just go look in the city and talk to people and ask people, how are you doing? And people will always like to tell you, because it's very politically correct, I'm fine, everything is going fine, I'm very happy. Talk to them a little longer. Ask them some questions about their life. And you come to the conclusion, that's not my idea of fine. That's not my idea of fine.
The material nature is endlessly relentless, and it will pursue you. For everything that we do that's against our Krishna consciousness, we have to suffer something. So this is very sobering. But let me share with you now this last verse, because it's very interesting. This verse Srila Prabhupada chose to put at the end of this purport about somebody who's fully surrendered. We may wish to be fully surrendered, but we may not be able to be. But the wish to be fully surrendered will allow us to relate well to what a fully surrendered person's opportunities are. The verse is from the 11th canto, 5th chapter of the Bhagavatam, verse 42. And this verse is a discussion between Narada Muni and Vasudev, Krishna's father. And Krishna's father, Vasudev, because the pastimes of Krishna are called Naranila, they're human-like, he does not think of himself as the father of God. He thinks of himself as the father of a very powerful, wonderful son. And sometimes, because of his relationship with Krishna, he knows who Krishna is, that he's the almighty personality of Godhead. And when he knows that, when that comes in his consciousness, he becomes very reverential and a little afraid. Because when you, if you have a friend or somebody and you treat them very casually and you find out that they're somebody very important, you'd be a little bit nervous. So Krishna doesn't like that because it inhibits the love between him and his devotee. And so he covers, his energies cover Vasudeva in such a way that he's able to think of Krishna as his son and forget that he's actually the almighty personality of Godhead. So that means that Vasudeva thinks himself an ordinary person, although he's super, super, super extraordinarily pious, and he's an elevated personality and an associate of Krishna. And so he offers prayers to sadhus for his own well-being, for the benefit of his son, and so on, in the same way that we do. He's thinking of his future and seeking advice from Narada. So then he's speaking to Narada, who's present in the palace, and Narada is answering his prayer, him in his request for advancement. The verse goes like this: Svapada mulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarma yat chat patitam katanchit dunoti sarvam hridi sannivistaha. And this is the verse that Srila Prabhupada has chosen to put place at the end of this important purport. Please hear this verse. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. Now, I'll read that again so that you can hear it twice and concentrate on it. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. Now, how does that apply to us? And how does it not apply to us? Any thoughts?
We are not fully surrendered.
Does everyone else have that fear? We're not fully surrendered. Hands up anyone who's fully surrendered. Who can put their hand up? The difficulty is we're not fully surrendered. And so this is an umbrella, right? And the umbrella is like this, and it says, all those who are fully surrendered, you're underneath this umbrella, and even if you make a mistake or you have a material problem of any kind, the Lord will immediately remove the reaction. You're fully protected. He loves you so dearly. What about us? What are your understanding? What is about us? We're not fully surrendered. What's our position? Yeah, what's our position?
Woeful.
Woeful. Any other thoughts? Yes?
We're still trying to stay in the shower.
We're still trying to stay in the shower. Yes, very good. Any others? We're a bit woeful, but we're still in the shower. Yes? Yes.
And so that's...
This is an interesting point. There's a little kind of a margin on the accidental part. And so if we accidentally fall down too many times, it's starting to look like a habit. So sometimes Prabhupada had devotees who were serving him who were accidentally falling down quite regularly. And Srila Prabhupada would say to them, once, forgiven, twice, forgiven, third time, slap. So he made a principle to help an accidentally, regularly accidentally falling down devotee to understand that you can't regularly accidentally fall down. It's an incompatible definition of terms. But yet, there's also the situation where one has an addiction. What do? They have an addiction. And the reality is that that's all of us. We have an addiction to the material energy. We've been here a long time. We think that the material world is going to make us happy. We think there's something we might miss out on if we were to fully give ourselves to Krishna. I think anyone will agree that this applies to us. And therefore, we repeatedly do things and apologize to Krishna for them and do them again. And do them again and do them again. So what to do with us? Any advice for us, from us? Slap, yes. Good girl. Get a slap. You ready for a slap? But the slap that Krishna gives to a young devotee who's continuously making mistakes is not this kind of a slap. Whoosh! It's not that kind of a slap. Because you see, a good mother or father may slap a little child, but the slap is like a slap. Yes. Yeah. What is your advice for us? Strengthen ourselves
from our fall downs.
Yes, this is a really important point. Strengthen yourself. If you have a weakness, learn from it. Learn from it. When you see it happen again, ask yourself, is this making me really happy? Or is this some misfortune from previous activities in this life or previous lives that is inflicting upon me this tendency? Or should I wholeheartedly say, this is making me so happy I can't give it up? And there's a wonderful part in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, which I cannot find it on the spur of the moment, where Krishna gives advice to a neophyte devotee. It's very nice, and he explains that you should get your mind like a horse, and you should get it into the track, into the right track. First a little gently to get it going, and then you gradually pull on the reins to the degree that you can manage. Not that you pull the reins so hard that the horses can't travel. And you hold the reins, and there's a wonderful prayer in this section. He's speaking about the mind, where he says that the devotee should think like this, that even if I fall down hundreds of times, even if I can't control myself, even if everything is happening to me, I will never give up your lotus feet. I will never give up your lotus feet. I may have to go to hell for my craziness. I may have to suffer in this way and that way, but I will never give up your lotus feet. And such a devotee, Krishna watches over them. Just as we heard, he watches, and he waits. Because he's been waiting a long time for us. He's been waiting a long time. He watches for the opportunity to push them slightly towards the bhakti path, and if they're very fortunate, to push them forcefully forward, because he sees that their sincerity is growing. And this is very mysterious, how somebody can have this and this at the same time. We naturally assume that a very advanced devotee won't have any faults. So when we see faults in devotees, we think, well, they're not there like this, they're not like this, because like this, you wouldn't have this. But you will see, right until the time of your death, that your material nature and your spiritual nature have to live together. And the more sattvic your spiritual nature is, the more the human nature is, the more easy it is to be compatible with your spiritual nature. But you still have to watch it. Because sattva guna is also within the material energy. Now let me read a little bit of this purport, because there's some nice things in this 11th canto purport. The word taktanya bhavasya in this verse is very significant. As stated in the previous verse, a pure devotee realizes clearly that all living entities, up to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, which are the topmost powerful personalities in the universal affairs, that right up to them, all living entities, that means everyone here, everyone we can see, and all living entities we can't see, which are in the millions and billions, just in this small room, or to speak of outside, and all the people in the city, and all the people in the offices, and all the people who are doing all kinds of things. All these people, all the children in the schools, all the teachers in the schools, all the people who made the things that are in the schools, they're all, everything, a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now here is a real issue, a weakness that most devotees have in faith, until they're mature. Therefore, we have to protect ourselves from making any further weakness in this area. We tend to see everything separately, and we tend to see forces as separate from the Supreme Force. We tend to see authorities as separately acting independently of the authority of God. We tend to be attracted to things and see them as independent of Krishna. And we use them as if they're independent of Krishna. And we think ourselves independent of Krishna. And sometimes when we're really a little bit bewildered, We think that we're really good people and really kind and really advanced because we come to the temple. Have you ever found yourself thinking like that? Look at the people in the street and you think, I'm good, I go to the temple. But actually that's not correct. It's the incorrect way to see. And an advanced devotee, a very advanced devotee, sees that Krishna is there everywhere. In the temple, outside the temple, and in the hearts of every living being. And he's mindful of Krishna wherever he sees him, and he sees him everywhere. So we must see the difference between our vision and that vision, so that we can protect ourselves from believing our vision is reality and thinking that that vision is something unusual and great. We should see that we don't come to this standard yet, and therefore we also need protection. Otherwise, we can slip into seeing like the whole world sees. We can just slip in so easily, and slip out and come to the temple, and slip back in again, and how much advancement can we make? So please listen to this. Realizing that everything and everyone is part and parcel of the Lord, a devotee automatically is not inclined to commit sinful activities by violating the orders of God. However, due to the powerful influence of material nature, even a sincere devotee may be temporarily overwhelmed by illusion and deviate from the right path of pure devotional service. Even a serious devotee, what to speak of us? In such a case, Lord Krishna himself, acting within the heart, removes such sinful activities. Even Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, has no power to punish a surrendered devotee who has accidentally committed sinful activities. All such secondary lords cannot threaten the Lord's devotee. When I read this morning, I thought, oh, it would be so wonderful to become a devotee. It would be so wonderful. Imagine having this consciousness. No fear, no having to check yourself all the time and make sure that you're on track or else you go off this way or that way. No attraction to the material energy. No feeling them and us, him and her, this, that, what's my future, and all the thoughts that actually crowd into our consciousness automatically until we come to the stage of devotion, or until we come to an aspiring to the stage of devotion, they wouldn't be there. Because we would see very clearly that I'm fully sheltered, fully taken care of, fully immersed in that shelter, and I'm fully satisfied. I'm so satisfied. And so satisfied was Srila Prabhupada that he could cross the ocean from India at 70 years old. And now they're healthy. We have some healthy people of that age, but there's two here who could understand what that would be like. To start a maiden voyage, never having been outside of India, never having been to a Western country, and be fully, firmly determined, having two heart attacks on the ship coming over. So the Prabhupada described it as his own severe type of seasickness that he underwent. And to do all of that, and not to be artificially sort of like a Superman, having no feelings of any kind, but to do all of that with the anxiety, with the fear, but to know that my shelter is so complete that like a small child, you see a child, sometimes they're frightened, but they go to their parent and they hold tight, and even though they're frightened, they feel very safe. So to have that sense of Krishna's presence with us, or our presence with him, or that everywhere he is, I look, I see him there, this is Krishna consciousness. consciousness that we have to practice. And we offer our services during the day, whatever they may be, in an effort to get to this point. In an effort to gain Krishna's mercy, that we can feel like this, we can perceive like this, and we read Shastra to get this level of realization, one day, who knows when. But that's what we're flying towards. And we have to be able to say, it would be horrible to fly alone, but I'm going to fly. Because I've understood something by Prabhupada's mercy, that the material world is not my home. And it's unsuitable for me. And there's so many arguments in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita, and in all the books of the Acharyas to help us to understand this is an unsuitable place. Don't invest in it. Do what you have to do. You have to live here, you have to do something. But make your real priority that I want to advance in my Krishna consciousness. And Krishna will definitely reciprocate with you. The argument may be raised against the fact, okay, next to the, in this purport, the example is given of Ajamil. How Ajamil was so bad. He's considered to be one of the most degraded men in the world. He was so, his behavior was so disgusting. Disgusting. If he was to come here, we would ask him to leave. Because he was such a man of bad character. And yet, somehow or another, just by naming his son, the Lord's name, and chanting his name, because he had no faith, so when he chanted, he didn't chant praying for something. This we all have to watch out for as devotees, that we're not chanting. And simultaneously praying to Krishna, please give me this, please give me that, please give me a wife, please give me a husband, please give me a child, I don't have a child, please give me more money, please, please, I know I shouldn't ask, but please give me a this, please give me a this, please give me a this. Because do you know what will happen? He will give it to you. And you go away with it. You say, thank you, see you later, bye-bye. I've got it now, I'm okay. And you'll miss out on the most valuable thing, because he'll give you that thing you wanted. Or, if for some reason you can't have it, like King Chitraketu, he wasn't meant to have a son, then you'll get it, but it will give you a lot of trouble. And then you won't come to the right conclusion. Again, you'll think, let me get some more. That didn't work. I need another wife, a better wife. I need somebody like this who understands me. And off you go again. So Krishna is saying, please, please, read, learn, study, think, talk, share with devotees. Try to understand. There's nothing here that can make you happy. Nothing. You can have it all. I'll give it to you. But you won't be happy. Even if you think you're happy for a short time, that's because I've pushed you and covered you. So then, here the point is raised in the purport by the Acharyas that no secondary person, that means that Ajamil became purified by his offenseless chanting. He chanted without any calculation. He just chanted the name. So all the glories are given to the name of Krishna, of Narayan, not to Ajamil. By chanting that name, he became purified. By our chanting, we become purified because of the name, not because of us. We can interfere, but as long as we keep going, our interference will lessen by the mercy of the name, and gradually we can one day chant the pure name. So he chanted like this, and because of that, the Vishnu Dutas came. Lord Narayan sent his servants because he saw that Yamaraj was sending his to get this man who was so abominable. So they were coming with their nooses and ropes to take him to where he deserved to go. But he had chanted, and then the Vishnu Dutas came and they stopped them. As we know, the Yamadutas were a bit, they were incensed actually. They were highly upset. We have this as our duty. this is the Vedic duty to take a man who's done like this to hell. How can you, who are you anyway, but how can you interfere with the running of the universe? How everything runs and you've come in like this. So the argument can be raised that different shastras state that the Vedic scriptures are the direct orders of the personality of Godhead. So how can the Lord tolerate that his orders be occasionally neglected, even by his devotees? So this is in reference to the Yamadutas had this doubt. They went back to their master and said, who were those people who interrupted us when we were doing our Vedic duty? Now, we were doing the right thing. We weren't doing the wrong thing, and they spoke so strongly to us. Who were they? And they had a doubt. If we do the right thing and then this happens, you know, does that mean there's somebody kind of more powerful than you? And it's interesting, sometimes as devotees we have this. We're thinking, oh, Krishna will take care of me, Krishna will take care of me, and something comes, whoosh! We think, uh-oh, does that mean there's something more powerful than Krishna's protection? So we can fall also into this kind of existential doubt in the heart. But answering this question, is it possible for Krishna to accept that a devotee makes a mistake and goes against the Vedic rules? Is it possible for him to accept this and tolerate this? The answer is, the devotees of the Lord are very dear to the Lord. And although a beloved child may accidentally commit an abominable activity, the loving, caring father forgives that child, taking into consideration the actual good intentions of the child. So here we come back to this point again. The responsibility with us. Our intentions have to be there. I would like to be a good devotee, but oh my goodness, it's so hard. And I keep falling over, doing this, doing that. But I'm not going to stop. I'm going to get up again and struggle again. And I wish I didn't have this problem, but I'm going to keep going. This is the right mentality, and even if we're very advanced, we should take on this mentality for fear of any unknown offensive activity that may occur outside of our awareness. Thus, although the devotee of the Lord does not try to exploit the Lord's mercy by requesting him to free him from any future suffering, he doesn't try to exploit. The Lord, by his own initiative, frees the devotee from the reactions to accidental fall downs. This causeless mercy of the Lord upon his devotees is called his Parama Swaryam. Parama Swaryam means his supreme opulence. 64 exalted qualities exist within the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the suprememost, the topmost one, is this, that gradually the faithful devotee, the causeless mercy of the Lord, is this supreme quality. So that gradually the faithful devotee becomes free, gradually, even from accidental fall down. Because, why? Because simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord, by remembering only what to speak of actively rendering service to him, his heart is purified. Have a good day at school today. Hare Krishna, Aditya. Don't forget Krishna. Okay? Hare Krishna. What to speak of actively rendering service to him? By just remembering him, his heart is purified. Although the surrendered devotees of the Personality of Godhead may sometimes appear to be affected by mundane attributes, they are inevitably protected by the merciful Lord and are never actually defeated in life. So there's two sides to this. And this we have to learn to
do as our own self-medication. We have to learn to give ourselves comfort, assurance, and encouragement. And we have to learn to have a little stick, at least a little stick in the hand, and point out with it all the things that we're not doing. And if you don't do both, then you won't be balanced. Some people like to see the good they're doing, and they're blind to the other side, and some people feel very bad about the bad they're doing, and they're blind to the power of bhakti to protect them and Krishna's mercy to nurture them and bring them forward. So two sides to our Krishna consciousness. Because we are right now in the world of duality, right? Where there's good and bad, up and down. Everything has two sides. Top has a bottom. Light and then there's darkness. This world. The spiritual world is not like that. There's light and dark, but it's not dual. Everything is the same spiritual nature. But we're here now, so let's discuss what we have to do to get from here to there first. And the first thing is we have to learn to balance like that. And we should, as practicing devotees, we should start to read and find quotes and things that have helped us at a particular moment and save them. And write them down, don't cut and paste them. There's a vast difference between using a pen in your hand to a click, click, click of a machine. Because there's no, when you click, 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 the machine does all the work. So the machine becomes Krishna conscious. And you become a machine. So write them down, find them, look for them. Try to find what helps you on both sides. Not one, what gives you encouragement and what gives you a chastisement or a slap. And find them, and then you should treat them in a visual sense like medicines, like Mother Nirmala with her homeopathic medicine. And you should put them all on the shelf and label them. In your mind of consciousness, you should know what it is that works for you. And you should practice going there. And you'll often find that the same things that work for you work for other people as well. Maybe not at that exact moment that they worked for you, but they're relevant. So this is the active life of a devotee. And this active life of a devotee allows a devotee to feel disgusted by what's attracting the attention and minds of everyone else, and certainly, more than occasionally, attracts their mind as well. And they feel like, what am I doing with my time? And they try to pull themselves back and they say, oh Krishna, that's like night and day. Because it's a duality. Here's the spiritual, and down there, material energy is very active. And one other thing I would like to say to the devotees, because there are many young devotees here as well as older devotees, and as well as serious and cultured Indian devotees, is that you must always stay in touch with the temple. Because the temple is like a fortress. It's like a fortress. And if you don't stay in touch with the temple and nurture the temple, nourish the life of the temple, then if there's an attack, just imagine if you had a fortress and you were outside the fortress, you were picking flowers or going for a walk, and a huge army battalion came racing towards you, you would rush as quickly as possible inside the fortress and close the door. Because it will fortify you, it will protect you. But if you are outside doing something and you say, no, I'm not going in there because I don't like so-and-so, and so-and-so said this to me, and my uncle was really rude to me last week, and my mother-in-law did this, and you go on and on and on and on and on, stay outside, then the army will attack you and they will take you away. And this is very common for younger devotees. Never think, I have enough Krishna consciousness now that I can just go off and do anything. Not even a serious older devotee can do that. And there have been many cases of devotees who were considered highly advanced in the movement, but they didn't succeed in doing that. And over in Sha
songs that we sing, the instruction is given, keep associating with devotees. Keep association with devotees. And that doesn't just mean having your bodies in the same place. It doesn't mean having prasadam together all the time, although that's very nice. And it doesn't mean just talking about mundane practical affairs all the time. It means actually culturing Krishna-conscious conversation, Krishna-conscious thought together with like-minded, like-natured devotees. And if you say, oh, there's no one like-minded to me, my mind isn't very unusual, there's nobody like that, then you try to help somebody else. And if you say, oh, I can't help anyone, I'm too full of myself, then try to make yourself the person who you're going to help. And try to help yourself. And you'll see, because Krishna is seated there, and he's causeless and merciful, you will see that he'll make arrangements for your growth and for your advancement. So these are points for us who are aspiring, fully surrendered souls. And it's wonderful, actually, if you stop for a minute and reflect on what is the condition and the circumstances of somebody who is fully surrendered. And it's certainly worth working for. It's definitely worth working towards. So we should encourage each other in that way. I'll stop here. If anyone has any questions, practical or otherwise, please.
What you are trying to say, we can't be pretender. Like Krishna says, Karmendriya and Sanya, Atte Mansashmandriya, Mumbratam, Mithya, Jasoti. We should be a pretender, really surrendered, and sincerely in truth.
Yes, we shouldn't be a pretender, but what I'm saying also, even more than that, is that at a certain stage of devotional service, and it may not be measured in years or not years, a devotee doesn't have the full vision of what they possibly can achieve. And rather than being a pretender, they let go of the rope prematurely. They're not exactly pretending, they just really think this is just a bit hard and I've forgotten what I'm working towards, and the material energy is attractive, and so they just drift. The pretender one is for those who are actually very serious, but they're pretending also, and they have to remove that pretentiousness. But most of us are drifting. I would say perhaps those who are more like born in the Indian culture may have to look and see if they're pretending. And perhaps those of us who are born outside of that culture have to hold on more tightly. And remember to hold on. And to do that, you have to remember both what you're gaining and what you lose if you don't do it. And then, as devotees, if you want to make further advancement, you have to get off the Kanista Adhikari platform. Because the Kanista Adhikari is very fragile. You know, one time, I've mentioned this before, that I saw when I was a child, a Charlie Chaplin movie. Charlie Chaplin is very funny. It's a silent movie from very old times. And in this particular scene, Charlie Chaplin, for those who don't know who he was a mimic. He didn't speak because there was no sound in the movies. And he was very funny, but in a certain way, at a certain time in the history of the world. So in this particular scene, he's got a new house. But his house, unfortunately, I can't remember why or how, is situated on the edge of a cliff. So there's a cliff going down like this, and the house is kind of sticking out like that. So he walks in the front door, and he's kind of like, I don't know, Mr. Bean, you know, like, sort of. So he walks in the front door of his house, and everything's fine. And he's doing things in the front part of his house. He's working on this and working on that. And then he decides to go for a walk. So he goes and leaves. But then he realizes he forgot his hat, because he always wears a hat. So he walks back into the house, but his hat is over here.
So he walks over here, and then you get a shot from the long distance from the outside of the house going like this. And he grabs his hat. He doesn't notice any of this. And he walks back to the door, and then the house goes straight again. And then it goes like that. It's all balanced again. And he's about to leave and go for a walk, and then he says, oh, he forgot his cane. He has a cane. He left his cane hanging on the door, on that door, this door. So he goes walking inside the house, walking blithely inside the house, and he's got his hat on his head now, and he goes and he picks up his cane, and he opens this door, the one that's over the edge of the cliff, and he puts his foot out. He's got his foot out, and you can see from the outside shot a foot sticking out to nothing. And then he forgets his flower. He wants to wear a flower on his lapel. So he closes the door, and he takes his cane, he's got his cane and his hat, and then he goes to get a flower from somewhere. He goes outside to pick the flower, and he's got the flower. And the whole time he's very blithe and self-satisfied with himself, pleased with himself. It's all so fine. But the audience is watching this, is watching him walk, about to walk in that door. And one time I remember a very serious devotee told me, who had many disciples, he said, watching a new devotee accepting the process of Krishna consciousness is like watching a man with a blade looking in the mirror and saying to himself, should I shave my face or should I cut my throat? Maybe I should shave my face. Maybe I should cut my throat. That's how he described it. And I never forgot that. And then can you imagine how Srila Prabhupada is watching us? Shave my face, cut my throat, walk out this door, walk out that door, happy, everything's blissful, jumping, dancing, everything, haribo, haribo, walk. So the answer, what to do? Move your house onto the solid land. Become more advanced. Don't live on the threshold of Maya Krishna, Maya Krishna. Because the Maya can wash you away or you can fall to the ground. So move your house further inland. Move inland. That means become a more serious devotee. Work on becoming a more serious devotee. There are 9 processes. There's a whole formula here. Take advantage of it. Use it. It works. Be a little patient, because many people leave because it doesn't seem to be working, because they have a high expectation and hope. But it does work. Use the process. Move yourself inland. Recognize the danger of falling off the edge of the cliff as valid danger, a risk, and try to more serious. And as you become more advanced, there are symptoms that you can recognize. If these symptoms are there, you know I'm becoming more advanced. And one symptom is that you feel concern and compassion. You feel kindly towards the misfortune of those who don't know about Krishna. It now makes you feel sad to see them like that. When you're beginning to go, it makes you a little envious. They're getting away with things. I'm not able to do that anymore. It's lucky they can do it. But now you start thinking, actually, it's so unfortunate. And you start to befriend devotees. Not as like, I like this one, don't like that one. But you get the principle that these few souls who were previously out there doing all kinds of crazy things, and so therefore they may have still got many unusual characteristics, but they've taken to the process of Krishna consciousness and they're my friends. And you start to want to avoid people who are very powerfully, sinisterly interested in getting you away from your faith in Krishna. You avoid that tendency. And you see that I'm doing all this because there is God. There is a Supreme Personality, and I want to serve Him. As these things come into focus more and more, you can understand I'm making progress. If they're going out of focus more and more,
this way. Don't put your foot out the door that goes down the cliff. Go further. Go out this door and take a walk this side. In other words, improve your Krishna consciousness as much as you can. So I've made you all sit here captive until 9 o'clock in the morning. Some people have escaped to work, but the rest of you, thank you for staying. And I wish you all the best. I have a question over here. Yes, Prabhu. Well, but Prabhupada, and even Bhaktivinoda Thakur shows an example of being a householder with more children and more responsibility and more worldly association. You know, he wasn't walking in a bubble, he was always dealing with the British directly, so he wasn't even dealing with Indian culture. And he explains that association doesn't mean that you don't see them, you know, you see them at work or you have to deal with people, but it means where you hold it in your heart. So you actually can work, because they can't give an injunction that doesn't work, it's not practical. You can work and be with people, but some people keep, you know, the impressions of what they say and how they're doing as theirs, and some people mix with them appropriately, but they themselves have a different interest. You can't escape that responsibility by being a householder. You know, I sometimes think to myself, you know, and I think, well, you know, I've got two children and I've got this and how can I? And then I think to myself, what are you going to say at the time of death? How many lives have you done this? You know? What are you going to say? Well, you've got to excuse me because I'm a... You can't say that. So therefore, the work goes on for me in that forum and the work goes on for you in that forum. And somebody else, the work goes on in the temple atmosphere. But the work has to go on. Or the result won't be there. And the work, so to speak, may be different. Differently shaped. But it still has to go on. That's, I think, what you come to as you get older in life. You realize there's no exemptions. You know, especially Australians are really good at getting exempt and, you know, government will fund us and, you know, it's not so bad. It's the lucky country. But, and there's no exemptions from the laws of nature. So I find it a bit shocking when I realize that there's no exemptions, I'm not going to be exempt. But that shockingness usually shapes me back. And with other people in the family situation, you have to deal with them as carefully and as best that you can. But that doesn't mean that you can't have your own sense of direction. And if you don't, or if I don't, that's my personal weakness, it's not because of the family. So I remember Srila Prabhupada with us, he was chastising us in Fiji for our laxity. And he mentioned somebody else who had influenced us, who were a friend who we were influenced by. And he said, he may have influenced you, but what have you done? So it was quite shocking that, you know, here's my excuse. It was that person's fault. And I was so foolish, I got their company. But he was saying, no, 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 no. You have to take responsibility for yourself here. You have to. Otherwise, at the time of death, your family won't go and say, oh, Gyan is such a wonderful husband, father, provider. We'll die for him. They won't do that. They can't do that and they won't do that. It will be me facing what I've done. So therefore we have to go forward regardless, or anyway, or as well. And you see, you try, you'll see that Krishna will help you. Because he's willing. Isn't it? We know it. We just have to do it. We know it. He usually doesn't ask you to change everything on the outside. He's more interested in the inside. Because changes on the outside don't usually bring a change on the inside. The change has to start working on the inside.
He's looked after us for so long already, but we've just been the illusion of thinking that it's us that's been doing the activity.
Yes, yes, exactly. And it's a sort of an amazing change of consciousness when you realize that he's doing everything, because even I am not separate than him. Even I'm an extended, small, infinitesimal soul. He's doing everything, everything, the sun, the moon, the everything. And imagine if I loved the person who I'm part of. I would see everything differently. So you start to sort of feel like the things that have been dragging your way for so many years, so many days, they're a bit boring now. You know, you can't have a future now. When you're a young man, you can be looking at your business future, and you're this, you're that. So, you know, we're in the space that we're going on the other side. So there's a blessing in that. But one shouldn't wait till then. One should try one's hardest at every point. Because otherwise, how are you going to get that blessing at the end unless you've worked hard throughout? And unless you can see, I tried, but I went here, I tried to go here, I went there, I did this, I did this, I'm still here. That's amazing. And say thank you, and here they all are. And I want to get closer to you. I don't want to only be here as a kind of a shallow devotee. I want to become a real devotee. Because they're here. They're asking us, come. And we're the one that's, no, I've got some things to attend to first. And they're mine. If you saw your family as his, they're all his. Your wife is there. Your children are there. Everything belongs to him. You would treat it a little differently. Right? A nice person, if you lend them something valuable, say, you can use it, but I want it back. They will try their best to treat it with a bit more care. A careless person won't, but a nice person will. So we should become like that. And the whole thing suddenly shifts. It's like amazing, and you don't want it to shift back. Because now you see, I've never been apart from you. And then we're wanting to do some service. And the process is working, and you're an example of how the process is working. Thank you very much. So we keep continuing. Isn't it? Yeah. There's no credit when you say the process is working. We can't take any credit. The credit goes to the process. And there's the proof that you're changing. You're still here. You're still going on. That's the proof of the process. And we're grateful to be able to show how the process works. And also to teach people by our mistakes. They might do this and this, that happens, and don't do that. I did it, but it doesn't work very well. Do this instead. So I have plenty of mistakes and plenty of moments of gifted shelter and protection, and we all have those as we continue on in our Christian consciousness. Thank you. Any more before we end for today?